Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening. Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host, Han Tran. Han, how are you this evening?
I am doing fantastic, Jim. Just simply fantastic. How about you?
Hanging in there. Welcome back to everyone. I'd like to give a quick explanation why we haven't been around. Unfortunately, I caught COVID and then gave it to my wife. It's one of those situations where the most unlikely possibility is exactly where it happened. I caught it on the construction site from a coworker. Now, you would never have thought that something like that would happen outside in a construction site, and that's where I got it. Co-worker actually did not know he had it, was asymptomatic, but was contagious. And so, thankfully, I have most of my voice back. If I don't make through the whole show tonight, Han, you're going to have to finish.
I can do that.
Yeah, I know you can. I don't have a problem with that. And, you know, so the good thing about it is we're both getting better. My the business associate that I was with, he actually had to spend too many days in ICU, but he is back home now, so he is getting better. It was a scary situation. It's not fun. I don't know if any one of our listeners have had the opportunity to go through this crap, but it is it's not something you'd wish on anyone, let alone an enemy. But welcome to Straight Talk, episode number 95. Tonight is going to be our last show of 2020, and we felt it only fitting that we kind of do a little wrap up, but mostly, you know, see what we can do about answering some questions that have come in over the time we've been off that everyone could have an opportunity to learn from. But before we started that, I wanted to talk about a couple things looking forward to the first of the year. The first of the year, our first show is going to be on the 5th, and we spoke a little bit about this, I think, in the last show or the show before last. But we're going to have a special guest with as part of our show, Han and I, and we're going to roll out and have them introduce the investor developer program that we've talked about. Now, this representative of the group will be able to answer all of your questions, talk at great length about the program and what is available, what the advantages are, and just really delve into the whole system. Now, again, to recap, we're talking about a program where this investment group, which happens to be a group of doctors and other individuals who will effectively either own a retail center where you would be one of the anchors in that new retail center. They would either be complete owner and you could lease it. You would be potentially a lease-to-own scenario. Or lastly, you can even be a partner in the group and effectively own your portion or your condominium side of the project. So there's a lot of financial questions. There's a lot of financial advantages. It's just a very attractive program that they would like to implement. we're working on a project right now up in Michigan with this program, and right now it is just beginning, and it looks like it's going to be very successful, both for the doctor as well as the group itself. So there's some real cool things about it. I wanted to at least bring that out, and everyone can at least get a chance. If you've got a question, send it in to us, or you can call in on the 5th to ask this individual. His name is Steve, and he'll be able to answer anything and everything you might have. The one really interesting part about this is it has the potential that you could have no money down and get yourself into a new facility. That's pretty attractive. Wouldn't you say, Hawk?
Yes. It's something that you don't hear too often about. We had done actually one project with this similar situation, but not quite, that the landlord pick up the tab for everything, for as far as the build out and the equipment and all that, and the doctor simply just opened the door and starts his practice. That is a very attractive option for a lot of younger dentists who may or may not be in the position to, to get financing and such. But yeah, it's again, it's another option, and it looks feasible.
Jim? Right, and this from my understanding, this group has the ability and the financial backing to be able to do just about anything they would like to get accomplished. Obviously, it's got to work for everybody, but at the same time, it's not like you have to, the hoops that you have to jump through to go through a bank and all the other stuff that you end up having to do just to be able to get off the ground. They understand, especially since they're a group of retired doctors and such, they understand how hard it is to get started. But at the same time, they also understand how great a business opportunity is to have a dentist as an anchor in a retail center. I guess I don't want to, spend too much time on that whole discussion, but to me, it's like, wow, to have that opportunity. Han, you even said that there's even some, wasn't there a doctor on one of the forums that talked about that he was willing to invest in dental practices because he wanted to be able to help the young dentists coming out to be able to get started and move forward. Well, this is kind of a similar situation, but even better in the sense that you're looking at it's not just a single doctor, it's a group. So you obviously have a much larger potential abilities to be able to do things.
Yeah, Jim, in this particular case that you just mentioned, is that the single doctor was promoting that he would he has the resource and would want to basically be in a partnership, more like a silent partner. So he owned, he will own finance and own part of the practice. What we're talking about in this particular group is that, the options is you can, you commit yourself to a lease and become the anchor, and they build the development and or the facility to accommodate that arrangement, and they remain the owner and the landlord, and or other, variety mix of business, relationship and stuff like that, whichever worked best for the individual doctor, and the investment group, and what they're looking for to do is to have a win-win situation for both parties. A little bit different, similar,
right.
But much more different, more viable, more attractive.
Well, you're right. You're exactly, you hit that on the head, because as the dentist, you're in charge of your practice. It's all yours. It's your business. You've got nobody telling you what to do, telling you how to do things. Nobody sitting back saying, even though I'm a silent partner potentially, that there's always going to be opinions coming from the, the backseat. Whereas this particular scenario, that doesn't exist. The only thing that the group potentially would own together is the building shell. The practice is yours. The inside of the building is yours. And so it's the win-win-win. Everybody wins. Now, I also want to make it very clear that we as a group, Han and I, do not have any financial association with this investment group. We, just like anywhere else, we only get paid for the fees to do the design work and architectural design work as we would on a normal project. So, we don't get a percentage of the project. We don't get a percentage of the ownership. We don't have anything in that regard. So we are just as we have always been and will continue to always be. We will be your advocate when we design your building and your space. It just so happens that we'll also more than likely be designing the rest of the retail center as well, because it only makes sense that you have one design group doing the whole building. Now, you may ask the question, and it'll get further discussed and reviewed in our next call or show, is what would be the other possible tenants? Typically, from the way they described it to me, it could be a combination of anything and everything, but obviously you would have a say as to who those other tenants would be. So you could make it a caveat that there wouldn't be another dentist, there wouldn't be any competitors, there wouldn't be any unsightly or unacceptable neighbors that are part of your facility. But it could be things like everything from, you pick it, pizza shops, retail establishments, telephone, T-Mobiles, AT&Ts, the typical stuff that you see in a retail center. And then obviously the location and where it's going to go and how it's going to look and all that stuff would all be reviewed and established. So I know our particular project that we're working on up in Michigan, right now, the piece of property that is that we're moving forward with, or at least the anticipation of the move forward with, the doctor picked. So the doctor picked this location, said, this is where I want to be. I like this location. The group reviewed it and said, it's an exact, acceptable, very attractive, perfect location for a nice little retail center. Has great traffic right on the corner, got great access. I mean, you name it, it's just perfect. So, don't feel like you'd be restricted. And, that could be some of the questions you could ask Steve on the next show. So wanted to spend a little bit of a time talking about what's going to happen there. The other thing that, Han and I have been doing this is, 95 shows. And we've never really had a chance to talk about this, before the show, Han and I were reviewing this a little bit. And, we get tons of listeners. And the interesting thing, and I guess we just want to take 5 seconds and share with you, is we don't get just listeners from the U.S. It's kind of really interesting in the sense that we have worldwide listenership. Right now, we have listeners from Canada. There's been listeners from Chile, South America, Australia, Thailand, and I'm looking at my display screen right now as I scroll over these areas where there's listeners who have come from, India, here's one from, we got with listeners from United Arab Emirates, Egypt, Turkey, Portugal, Italy just came on, which was interesting, hadn't had that for a while, Switzerland, Germany, the UK, Croatia, Romania, Russia. It's literally, it is a worldwide listenership. So it's kind of interesting to think, you know, when you, that we're talking to a bunch of folks literally all over the world. So I just thought that was something that we'd like to share with you folks to understand that, you know, there are dentists everywhere. And one would assume that it's dentists or people that are in the dental business that are listening to us from those particular locations. Thought that was kind of interesting, huh?
Yeah, you know, actually, we have from time to time people from that come on and you know, download our information. They are architects from Israel, you know, from the Middle East, from Spain. So the good thing is they can speak English, because I just can't imagine like myself or Jim speaking Russian or Portuguese. Thank God they all speak English.
Or they have some way to translate our call into their language. I don't know. I really don't know how that works. It's interesting that you brought that up, but I have no idea how that works.
Well, you know, some languages, Jim, when they translate, you lose the you know, the context of the discussion. And how do I know that? Well, at one time, before English was my, you know, is my natural language, you know, literally translation from English to Vietnamese and vice versa. It just like, did you just say what I heard you said? You know, that type of thing, because the translation, you lose some of that. So it's just interesting. But again, you know, it's, I'm glad that they plugged in, and hopefully they learned something or got some value from our discussions. Jim?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, what do you want to say? Dentistry is a national language, or a worldwide language. Dentists all over the world.
Well, as long as they're human, they all have teeth, right? At least right now, you know. And those teeth need to be worked on, and typically they work in a building. So, you know, we have some value in how we design, you know, or how we recommend a building to be designed. And, that would be helpful for them to plug in and at least hopefully put some of that to use, right?
Right. And to those international listeners that are listening right now or are going to be listening to the later podcast, we do have that program that's available where you can have the design work done by our team, Han supervising everything, of course, and heading that up. And then you can then take that design work and utilize somebody local within your community. Let's say you're from, you know, Israel or Portugal or anywhere else, you know, you can have your local architect there. We can help them, and they can do the necessary things that you need to do locally. It makes a lot more sense to do it that way than try to have, you know, myself do the architecture, you know, for a project that might be in Portugal or something like that. But obviously within the States, that's a different story. But they're in international folks, we're fine with that and more than happy to help out that way.
Hey, let me share a piece that, you know, some of our listeners could appreciate. And because the buildings, but the culture of where that building is going to be located do dictate how it's going to be used. okay? A dentist in the United States probably looked at it, you know, look at this particular scenario and go like, no way, okay? You know, we have always read that in some culture there is a class division, you know, that where a certain economic class do not mingle with the, you know, with a lower economic class. Did a consultation and help with dentists. And in the United States, we've always heard this, you don't need a large office unless, you know, a large personal office unless you're going to spend a lot of time in there and or you spend the time in there seeing patients, seeing staff or seeing salespeople, that you need a large, you know, larger office to be like the executive type of environment. So in the United States, we typically try to whittle that piece down where the dentist have a space that he or she can go to decompress, make a few phone calls, just kick back, relax a little bit between, you know, seeing patients. So it's not very large. But this particular design, I kept saying to the dentist, you don't really need a large, you know, almost comparable to a, you know, a executive level in a corporation in term of real estate. And if you don't spend time in that office, you should be seeing patients. And he shared with me that he needs that office, his personal office space, to be large and nicely appointed because the VIP patients don't wait in the waiting room. They wait in his personal office. And I say, well, what exactly is a VIP patient? He say, in our culture, the rich don't spend any time waiting with the common folks. In the United States, we go like, really? But in other culture, that's just the norm. Okay, so it's interesting when you design or involve in, you know, in the design of building projects, dentist offices, in, you know, for other culture, for other countries, even other dentists with particular religious practices. It matters a lot. So it's fun. It's interesting, but you have to customize the design for those individual requirements as well. And it's it can be challenging, but definitely fun and interesting. We have one where the waiting room and the, you know, typically in a dentist's office in the United States, the waiting room is separate from the clinical area, and the walls are usually solid. In this particular case, the wall that divide the treatment room and the waiting room was glass, transparent glass. And the reason for the doctor is, or the dentist is, to say, I want those in the waiting room to see the quality of the treatment that I provide to my to my patient in my chair. And I thought, well, that's a different way to look at it. Because the United States, you go like, you know, build me a wall that nobody can see, nobody can hear, or, you know, or anything. And so it's just a different culture, but it was an interesting take. So that'll be fun. I'm looking for a volunteer in the United States to go make my whole building all glass. Wouldn't that be fun? Jim?
Oh, that's good. That'd be interesting. Very, very much so. That'd be interesting. Okay, let's kind of change course a little bit here and talk a little bit about some of the questions that have come through. One that we've heard, and this kind of is a combination of two or three questions from different folks put together, and basically the synopsis is, you know, it looks like we're going through a second wave of this COVID crap. Some states are experiencing some of the highest levels that they've ever experienced. Some are seeing, you know, just more, maybe not as severe, but just more and more cases. It could be contributed to whatever Could be, you know, more testing is causing more cases to show up, or it's just because people are just getting tired. They're getting tired of all this stuff and maybe let their guard down, and next thing you know, they've got another case. But the bottom line is, with a potential another spike coming through, please recap what you recommend as a protection system for my facility. Well, Han and I were talking a little bit about this before the show started, and it really is broken to pieces. And I'll start with the first one. The first one is airborne. So you've got the airborne pathogen that comes from two locations. Really, when you think about it, it's two locations. The biggest one is in the chair at the mouth when you do any procedure. You've got, all the aerosol that's coming out of there that is spreading throughout the whole room and effectively throughout the whole facility. Go back and listen to our previous podcast. Go back and listen to our interview program with Dr. Tom Orange. There's a ton of information about all that stuff. But the protective system that we would recommend would be a twofold in that protection of the airborne aerosol. One, a system that gathers up the aerosol at the patient. So something like one program that we really liked was Dr. David Crank and his system. I can't remember the name of the system.
Aerosol Solution. That's
it. Thank you very much. I knew you'd remember it. You know what they say? One of the side effects of COVID is lack of memory. Maybe I'm experiencing the side effect. I can't remember that stuff sometimes. But Aerosol Solution, go check them out. We feel that it was a very good, for the money, a very, very good system to collect the aerosol right at the patient. Okay. It's quiet. There's a lot of good things about it. It's high quality. It's designed to last. It doesn't cost $1 million. And when you think about it, it works very, very, very effortlessly. And the biggest thing that I liked about it is that it worked in combination with the already existing system, your HVAC system, your heating and your air conditioning system. It worked independent, but also in combination with. So it didn't just filter the air and throw it outside and waste all of that heating or air conditioning. It sucked up the stuff. It filters the system. It throws some of it in and some of it outside. It's very adaptable. It can go into an existing location. It could go into a new location. It's user-friendly. There's just a lot of good things about it. So we felt that, being able to gather the aerosol at the patient is the first line of attack. The second line of attack is for the other airborne parts, which would be anytime somebody walks into your building from the front door till the time they go back out that front door, they're breathing. And by breathing, they're putting potentially the pathogen into the air. Just like my buddy who was sick with COVID, didn't know he had it. He was infected and he was breathing. Obviously, I must have walked through his airstream and didn't know it and picked it up. And so that's the exact kind of thing that could happen in your facility. That's kind of why Han and I have always recommended we like the one way in and the one way out. If you can redesign your space or design your new space so that you have a one way in and one way out, you don't have the crossing paths of the potential carrier, the patient, and or staff. so that you can minimize that. But the other system that we're talking about is UV light that is integrated into your HVAC system in the ductwork. So you can use the high quality, high intensity UV light, the UV-C light, which is the stuff that will kill pathogens, and you put that inside your ductwork away from anybody, that so there's no harm to any of your patients or your staff or yourself, and that takes care of your core. Those two things right there will do your biggest and best bang for your buck. Now, Han, we have the surface stuff. I want to talk a little bit about what we thought we would like to do for the surface, or at least recommend.
Yeah, so when you deal with the surfaces, of course, you have on all sorts of disinfection that you can use. If it's an unoccupied space, of course, UV light system can scrub your, you know, the surfaces, and that is should only be used when the room is unoccupied. You hear so much. Let me see. In the last month or so, a lot of company is promoting upper atmosphere UV, UV light sterilizers and so on, and it's promote that you can use it in an occupied space. We just are not comfortable with that type of apparatus because light rays had a tendency to bounce. So when they hit the surface, it bounced. Where does it go? It bounced downward into the occupied space. You don't know that you're being affected until into the future, when you start to have skin cancer or eye problems and things like that. So we're more on the cautious side, and UVC light arrangement or arrays, we feel a lot more comfortable, more safe, if it's in the HVAC system, ductwork rather on the outside, you know, in within the room when it's being occupied. There's disinfectant that we can use. Jim, help me out. What is that Mark have that?
The product that go back to our podcast where we interviewed Mark Bly and Z Innovations. It's the Germ 24 product, which is a non-alcoholic based sterilization system protocol that does effectively kill COVID within 15 seconds and stays on the surface of where it's applied and creates a barrier and a shield that continues to kill COVID for up to 30 days as long as it's not worn off or rubbed off after a bunch of touches. So it kills initially, and then it has what's called that residual kill over the 30-day period. So there are systems like that. That happens to be one that we thought was a very cost-effective and successful system that takes the place of the alcohol-based stuff. You guys have all dealt with and know that stuff. And unfortunately, what, alcohol on? Destroys material, right?
Alcohol destroys material. Actually, there have not been a study that we can find on that quantified the effect of UV light on material, on finished material. Because, again, introducing UV light into the environment, it will break down polymers. Eventually, we don't know how much or how the degradation duration will be, but that's something that should also kind of keep an eye out on when you use UV light. And again, alcohol would damage. So anything that you can use that minimize the effects on your finishes, your chairs, and all the plastic surfaces that you touch. There's one thing that we didn't, that we did not cover on any of our program, Jim. I saw some research on their company, and I do believe it's United States based, that produces films that you put onto an area with high touches, like doors, for instance, door handles, cabinet surfaces, where you touch, you know, when you touch all the time. And I do believe it's good for like 90 days, where it kills bacteria and virus and continue to perform at such level. You put it, you know, it's manufactured in a way that when you put it on, it can be transparent or have some opaque and color to it so that people know, you know, that's there. But it's a film, you know, similar to a protective film you find on new appliances or new equipment. It works in that application. It, you know, it stick on and peel off, and then you put it on new.
I think we may have talked about that during our program presentation with Dr. Tom Orange at is it Thousand Gems? But the product that you're talking about is either it's either impregnated, more likely it's impregnated with zinc or silver ion, both of which kill COVID. It effectively stops COVID from multiplying, so it doesn't have a chance to multiply and effectively infect somebody, because it won't transfer off of that. And you're right, that film is designed for those high-touch areas. You put it on door handles. You put it on corners. You put it on cabinet handles, places where thousands of people touch. You put it on buttons, like elevator buttons and
yes,
those kind of things. And it makes for a lot of sense. I think it lasts for a period of 30 days, then it has to be replaced, and another one placed on it over it. But, you know, when you compare it to the cost of having to pay somebody the time to
yes,
wipe down everything every day, multiple times a day. And, you know, Han, you were saying about how alcohol-based product destroys materials. It basically will destroy every material to some level, whatever that material is, with the exception of metal. But it will take finishes off metal. And that's the interesting thing. Most people don't think that. Well, you know, I've got a metal doorknob. Yeah, but your door handle has got a finish on it. That finish will be taken off by hundreds and hundreds of applications of an alcohol-based cleaner. I know back before we got integrated into, and, you know, we here at the house, we use the Germ 24 stuff. But back before that, my wife was wiping the house down with an alcohol-based product. You know what happened? All the handles and all the handrails on the stairs that go up and down the stairs have all been stripped of the finish. They're wood railings, and the varnish or the veneer finish that's on there has all been stripped down to the bare wood again. So come springtime, I'm going to have to refinish the railing because the finishes are gone. The alcohol base did it that fast.
One thing that we haven't thought about, Jim, you know, years ago, probably not like the late 80s, early 90s, there was a big push to minimize aerosol use in our environment. And so even though they're not, you know, the cleaner is not an aerosol base where you spray, but you still are squirting it. Okay, so it's in some form it is a small particulate of droplets of product that gets up in the air, and you get to breathe in that as well. So if you do this every, I think the regimen of cleaning that I've seen on some of these businesses is that high touch areas need to be sterilized like every 8 minutes. That's a lot of chemical, and that's a lot of human, you know, labor. So anything that you can do to minimize and introduce chemical into your environment is a plus. So I thought it was interesting with the
The one area that we didn't talk about yet on surface, which is probably the most important surface that most people don't realize, is your floor. The floor surface is the largest collector of this pathogen. No, because eventually gravity will take over, and that pathogen particle that's airborne will eventually hit that floor. If it doesn't get caught by a countertop or some other material, like a seat cushion or something else, it will hit the floor. And it will be on that floor for some extended period of time. The jury's out on how long, and it really depends on what the product is that's on. You know, if it's in carpet, you know, it's going to be there for quite a while. So if it's on a floor surface, we have been recommending and will feel very strongly that you integrate, especially in your operatories, some kind of hard surface, cleanable, sterilizable floor surface. Something like a hospital grade floor system that you can sterilize and clean. Because that floor will be your biggest collector and potential area for this pathogen to be in. And Han, you've said it so many times in our shows, I remember, when you walk across that floor, you're kicking up, you're tracking around, you're moving that pathogen from point to point just on the bottom of your shoes, let alone if you drop something. Or let alone if you put your purse on the floor, or let alone if for some reason you touch the floor. The floor is one of the dirtiest places in your facility, hands down.
And it doesn't have to apply only to the clinical area. Floor itself, anywhere, everywhere, is a collector of all kind of stuff. So, you know, for you parent or for you listener who had kids, especially if they're running in your dentist's office, don't let them crawl around on the floor. Right? But yes, we strongly advocate for a seamless flooring system that you can easily clean. Because again, steam harbor, you know, everything and everything that you can possibly think of between the seams. So the worst thing that you can put into your clinical space is carpet, right? Don't do that. Even if they tell you,
the second worst thing you could do is carpet outside your clinical space in your clinical corridor. Because the minute you walk out of the clinical space, you've tracked all of the stuff that was on the floor into the corridor. And in that corridor, if it's carpet, you've effectively, you just think of it as, treadwear. How do you see treadwear happening? Well, it's where everybody walks, right? Well, think of that as spreading the pathogen. That's where all the pathogen is going to be, is on that, in that treadwear path. So outside corridor in the clinical area is probably the second most important area, and then it obviously goes down from there.
Yeah. You have to look at functionality versus aesthetic, and we just strongly believe that function is very, very important. Aesthetic, well, it will get ugly on you in a short period of time, okay? So keeping things, because it is a clinical area, it should be as clean as you can keep it. Material selection and choices should be done with that mindset rather than how pretty you want it to look. Yeah, we strongly believe in making things look pretty too, but functionality and cleanliness is priority on the list.
Yeah, because you can always make attractive solutions, but also ones that are able to be cleaned and sterilized. There's nothing worse than having the situation we had mistake. My practice had to be shut down because I got COVID. One or two of my staff have COVID, and so we've effectively had to shut down the practice. You don't want to have that happen, and you know this is the way to solve that. So. Hopefully that answered the two or three people that asked those questions in combination. Han, you said you had a question or a thought you wanted to talk about having to do with, was it site?
Building site, building and site, okay?
Yeah.
We had blogs and we have discussion about, the importance of a good site design. This was presented just recently, and I thought it's worth talking about. When you as a dentist or as design professional, even that, when we look at site, it's just it's a necessary evil. It's a place where you park. What's the big deal? And I think the things that we never think about when we look at site is, when we buy a piece of land and develop it for a commercial building, whether, it's an office building for a lawyer, a dentist, the function of the site and how it's designed is to get people, to get your customer, patient, client onto that site safely, allow them to move through that site safely, so that they can park and then get into your building with no drama. So the simpler you make the site, the simpler you design the site, the better it is. At one time when I spent part of my life doing this, so I look at this a lot more than simply how many parking spaces do I need. It depends on what part of the country you're in. You don't think about the function of a site in its relationship to the buildings and all that until after it's done. And you're like, oh my God, why couldn't I get to, why is the back door located at the farthest point away from the parking lot? Or why is the trash dumpster located on the opposite side of the parking lot from the back door and all that stuff? That's the worst time to complain about why things weren't done right. It's because you didn't have somebody that know how to design the site to work with the building. This particular site, it's kind of a weird shape. And then top that off, we had two buildings. And the building is put so that it kind of touch each other, almost touch each other in the corner, and it divides the parking lot into like little pieces and parts. And it's become, even though it's still on paper, I can envision the confusion that a driver or a person arriving onto that property, like, where the heck do I park? Where is the stinking front door? Why is this building had? I'm looking at the back of the building and not the front of the building. So it was absolutely convoluted. So I'm looking at what I'm saying is that if you buy a property and you're going to design it so that it makes it as simple as possible. It gives you the most parking count as you can get. If you are in a no part of the country, where the heck are they going to put that 16 or 20 inches of snow that fall the night before? Okay, stockpiling snow could take up a good chunk of your parking lot. So the design of it have to take that into consideration. How many little islands you're going to put in, so the building looks nice. But when they plow it, when they take out all the curbs and they take down the trees and all that stuff got to be taken into consideration. I'm hoping that this particular dentist is listening. When you lay out a site, have the site done by a real professional, whether it's an architect or a civil engineer, not just anyone that can plunk down a box and say, here's a building. There's a lot of things that come into play in terms of like how far is each building got to be from each other because of fire rating. How is the site layout so that the fire truck can get onto the property to put out the building? How the site is layout so that the refuge or the trash pickup can be done without it coming to your parking lot and take out cars and things like that. If you are put in two buildings on a site, does that make sense? How about a single building that's going to be added on into the future? When you lay out a site, design it so that you know what's going to happen in the future. Don't leave it to chance to say, I'm going to add on a building over there. Well, when you start to do that, when it's time to do that, you may not be able to because it was poorly laid out. It was never planned. Okay. Another thing is if you're going to develop a site to have multiple buildings, go through the design process so that you can get approval to develop that property so that in the future, when you're ready to do it, you don't have to go through the process of getting approval for the, for the standard at that time. You have everything already been approved and you have been writing. It's somewhat already been thought out so that all the infrastructure, utilities, and all that is in its proper place. So you don't have to dig up anything again to accommodate the new building. Planning is absolutely crucial for your success and it should not be done by just anyone that going to sell you equipment to plunk out something for you. Think it out, plan it out, invest into getting the proper answer that needed so that in the long term it will save you money, it will save you a lot of gray hair, and save you a lot of time. The things that I often see, that are posted for a building, a brand new building particularly, the things that often lack is how will this be placed on the site? How will it work on the site? Is it in the right orientation? Is it designed to work so that it gives you the optimal orientations and access and all that good stuff? Because you don't want to design a building in the, in your supplier's office and then try to plunk onto a site that where the building doesn't work. Okay. Sounds like I'm lecturing here, but I am, because you're going to spend a lot of money. Invest it properly, plan it out. So that way you have somewhat of a map of how you're going to navigate the process of future expansion, and at the same time, how efficient the layout of the building and the site, so that those who come to your office are safe and are still pleasant when they get into your building, because they didn't have to navigate through a maze to come in for services. Is there anything you want to add to that, Jim?
Actually, you've hit on a couple really, really important points that I just want to elaborate a little bit on. And one has to do with the planning and zoning approval process. that you talked about, you discussed about getting approval on the whole master plan. We have always advocated, and when it's allowed, we would recommend that you get approval for your master plan through planning and zoning, so that, like you said, it's approved, it's there. Now, if you decide to make a little bit of a change later on, they can do it administratively. You don't have to go through all the gymnastics and the approval process again to be able to get it accomplished. And at the same time, you're doing it one time. So it saves you money because there's always fees involved. There's always hours necessary, and that costs money. And this adds up. But the most important part about it is you now have it established, so that down the road, if, and it happens, there may be changes to the system or to the planning and zoning code. And if those changes go in the wrong direction, you may not be able to build that what you planned on doing as your future expansion because the code changed. But if you've already gotten the master plan approval, it hopefully would grandfather it in so that you can't be changed later on 2 or 3 years down the road when you decide you want to do it. So that's one of the biggest things. And then the other part we were talking about is properly planning for any potential expansion is crucial. Now, you know, you may say, come on, guys, really, what are you talking about? Well, here's what we're talking about. I'll give you a prime example. You put the electric service panel and service entrance into your building in the wrong place. You place it where you're going to put your expansion down the road. What does that cost you? It costs you tens of thousands of dollars to relocate that service panel because that service panel has to be on the outside of the building. It can't be buried in the middle of the building. So you can't put an addition over top of it. And 9 times out of 10, Han and I have seen that you never add the addition on there because it is so cost prohibitive to move that whole service panel with all the electrical wires going to it. That's just one. The other has to do with anything that has to do with HVAC. So we're talking about grills or exhaust or ductwork or equipment, air intakes, anything that has to do with your heating and air conditioning. If that's in the wrong place, it will stop you from putting the addition on your into your building. Those two things are big, and they have large dollars associated with them. And we're not talking about a couple $100. We're talking about tens of thousands of dollars to redo this stuff. So money well spent to properly plan, have the right kind of professional that understands what they're doing to properly plan for that potential expansion, even though you may say, you know, there's only a 15 or 20% chance I'm going to expand this in the next 5 years. Do it right. Because if that happens, you have the possibility of doing it. You do it wrong, you're never going to have an expansion. And that property that is sitting there that you think maybe you can do something with will just be blank property and never be turned into a building that will make you money. Does that make sense, Han?
No. Yeah. Now, and Jim, master planning a site, recently I was in a discussion, and this particular dentist have a very large parcel. I think it was 150 acres. Okay. And my question, my same question is, how would this building be used on this property? And I think we kind of covered this in one of the previous episodes. And the response was, I got a lot of land. I can do anything. True. But that anything, is it right? Okay. You can take a building and throw it in the middle of 150 acres and say, man, there's nothing that can't be done. But the question, you know, I think the old adage is, even if you can, should you?
Yeah, okay. Just because you can, should you?
Yeah. Yeah. And so the design, the planning is very crucial. No matter how much land you have or don't have, the function, the flow, everything, not just apply to the inside design of your building, because you hear that all the time, you know, form, follow, function. That applies to the outside as well. And that should be handled by people who know what to do, not just simply testing it out and cutting their teeth on your project. Jim?
Yeah. And we recommend, when you say people that know what they do, that's talking about the architect and the design team. Nothing wrong with civil engineers, but they don't know as much about dental offices as, for example, we do. So we understand why you would want to locate your operatories on a certain elevation, a certain direction as it pertains to north, south, east, and west, and why. They don't. We also understand why you want to locate the building in such a way that the front door is the first impression. It's a business thing. It's a first impression. Your front door is important. How do I get to the front door? Go back and listen to all our podcasts. I think we had one that had all about first impressions. I did go back and look. Episode number 90 is our interview with Dr. David Crank at Aerosol Solution. And I believe episode number 70 is our interview with Mark Bly from Z Innovations and Derm 24. For anyone who is interested in going back and listening to those, I believe those are the episodes. So as always, Han, we've burnt through an hour. It's been enjoyable. You know, thank you for putting up with us. Sorry for the few weeks that we missed. I will promise we'll try not to do that again. It wasn't fun. I don't want to do it again. We are looking forward to a great year. We're going to start it off with our first show in January 5th with this new program, and our special guest, Mr. Steve Vest, is part of the representative from that group, and it looks to be like a very interesting year starting out. So with that, Han, I want to say thank you to everybody and have a great holiday, but I'll let you have the last word.
Fantastic. Again, it's been a fun hour. Appreciate everybody plugging in and spending with us. Until the 5th, I wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and a safe one as well. Take care then. Until next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. Contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.